So really fascinating and instructive, Meshech Chochma, about living in Israel before Mashiach has come, when we're still struggling, navigating our way through the process. The Meshech Chochma discerns very interesting disparity between Yitzchak's first interaction with the Kodesh Baruch Hu and his second and last. Remember, Yitzchak only has two. Avram is constantly speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yaakov is constantly speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yitzchak, well, first there's a famine, Vahira Baritz Mavad HaRav HaRishon. Yitzchak's on the way west and south. He's on the coast near Grar, near Avimelech Melech Plishtim, somewhere in that area where the Plishtim resided. But presumably he's heading south where the food is plenty, where the Egyptians have irrigational ditches and they can survive famines, like his father Avraham descended. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu implores him to remain in Eretz Yisrael, famous line, Gur Baritz Azos, Shchon Baritz Azos. But that mandate also carries with it a haftacha. Hashem tells him, I will be with you, I will bless you, I will give you the land, I will fulfill the Shvua to Avraham your father. You'll have plenty of children. This is really the first time that Yitzchak receives the haftacha, the guarantee, the vision, the promise, the legacy. And he doesn't build a mizbeach. Avram's always building a mizbeach, preaching, publicizing. No mizbeach. Second interaction, at this point Yitzchak is now living in Grar. And he has that fracas with Avimelech. Rivka is taken. Rivka is returned. He becomes a farmer, Me'er Sharim, famous city named after this, as part of Yerushalayim. Then he has success and bounty, cattle, and at that point, the frictions and tensions flare, and there's a lot of digging of wells and removal of wells. And then finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him, this time at night. So this is really the only appearance, the only vayera. Remember in the previous section, it says vayera l'Hashem. This is a nighttime apparition. And he promises him, don't be afraid. I'll bless you. I'll protect you. And at this point, Yitzchak builds a mizbeach. Vayiven sham mizbeach vayikra b'shem Hashem vayetshem ohala. So at this point, Yitzchak builds his one and only mizbeach. So in general, it's interesting that Yitzchak builds far fewer mizbechos than Avraham. It's in line with the generally accepted view of Yitzchak as a post-revolutionary. I'll speak about this later this week. Avraham establishes new ideas. Yitzchak is more sedentary, more concentrated on consolidating and entrenching the gains of Avraham Avinu. So he builds fewer mizbechos. But why does he build it in that second stage, after the tensions with the shepherds and the wells? And not the first stage, after the famine and the promise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you would have thought, I would have thought, simple reading is that the first time he hasn't really found a location that he can settle into. He's on the move because of the famine, but he's living in Grar, he's living as a guest. You're not going to build a mizbeach. You may preach, you may proselytize, you may discuss, but you're not going to build a mizbeach in a land which isn't yours. But by the time the narrative unfolds, all those well diggings, he finally builds a be'er, and there's no argument about that, and it's called Rehovot, and he then goes to Be'er Sheva, and it seems like he has more of a permanent fixture. It's not sure. I mean, he builds the built it in Be'er Sheva. I remember Be'er Sheva was the land that Avram had secured as part of his treaty with Avimelech in Parshas Vayera. And this whole process of digging a well and having relief from the tensions with Avimelech leads to a detente or diplomatic reconciliation, which then leads to one could call a reinforcement. He then once again receives Be'er Sheva, and in this case, not because of the seven sheep that were part of the agreement between Avraham and Avimelech, but more prominently because of the Shvuah, Vayishbu Ishliachiv. Again, Avraham also takes the Shvuah, but it seems like Avraham refers to Be'er Sheva in part because of the seven sheep that were so instrumental to this treaty. For Yitzchak, there aren't seven sheep, it's just about the Shvuah. So the simple reading is that Yitzchak is consolidating his hold, either in Rehovot or in Be'er Sheva or in both locations. So it's more logical to erect a structure, more permanent, rather than just a little soapbox or a little stand for him to preach. Now a Mizbech. So it seems as if Yitzchak's hesitation to build a Mizbech in the early stages because it doesn't have a stable, permanent location. But as the Parsha unfolds, through a lot of struggle and a lot of tedious negotiations and a lot of adversarial confrontation, but Yitzchak is inching towards a more stable and permanent hold in both the well of Rehovot and the city of Be'er Sheva. So it's only appropriate as part of that process of stabilization to build a Mizbech. The Meshech Chachma feels that the difference between the non-Mizbech in the early stage of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message to Yitzchak and the Mizbech in the end is not reflective only of this stabilization of Yitzchak's hold, if anything, the opposite. When Yitzchak initially experienced the famine, Hashem promises him he will protect him, he will support him, he will give him a bracha, and he will also deliver the land of Israel. The language of that bracha is, Ki lecha ulezarecha ateinis kol haaretz hoseil. And part of the reason Hashem says that is because he doesn't want Yitzchak to leave. Yitzchak's role is to reinforce the Jewish hold on the land of Israel. So Hashem has to remind him that this land will belong to his children. Later, when Yitzchak's in the middle of this confrontation, this ongoing confrontation with Avimelech, Hashem doesn't mention much about Eretz Yisrael. Hashem mentions, I'll protect you, I'll bless you, I'll give you bounty. Because now Yitzchak is not fleeing Israel, he's not migrating out of the country, so Hashem doesn't mention that whole aspect of the bracha. The Meshech Chachma believes this is the reason that during after the initial bracha, which included our hold in Eretz Yisrael, Yitzchak didn't want to erect the Mizbech. After the second bracha, which omitted Eretz Yisrael, didn't speak, didn't emphasize Eretz Yisrael, Yitzchak felt more comfortable building a Mizbech. For a Mizbech is not just a rostrum from which to preach religion. Mizbech is also reflecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promises, publicizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promises. Moshe Rabbeinu builds a Mizbech after the war with Amalek, and refers to the Mizbech as Hashem Nisi. Now, Moshe isn't preaching religion to anyone. The Jewish people haven't yet experienced revelation. Amalek soldiers have been at least repressed, if not annihilated. And the Mizbech, in Moshe's case, is just to demonstrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Haftacha, to publicize HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message, that Hashem has this eternal crusade he expects of us against the forces of evil in this world, against Amalek. So Mizbech isn't just a rostrum from which to speak religion. Mizbech is to reinforce, to publicize, to showcase certain divine messages about the Jewish people. The first message about Israel and the conquest of the land of Israel, Yitzchak didn't feel comfortable erecting a Mizbech to publicize that promise. The second promise, which didn't really discuss Israel, in the land of Israel, just general providence and protection, Yitzchak felt comfortable. Why? Well, for two reasons. First of all, because Yitzchak was cautious. If he would publicize too aggressively, too confidently, too triumphantly, that this is our land when there still are other residents living there, it could provoke, it could incite, it could elicit hostilities or could generate hostilities. So Yitzchak kept it quiet. Yitzchak kept it rather subdued and rather muted. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu initially promises him the land of Israel, he doesn't build a Mizbeach to highlight and to broadcast that promise. And I think it's an important message about our stance and our posture in Israel. On the one hand, part of living through Yimos HaMashiach and part of living through Geula and part of living through the restoration of Jewish history is to feel that confidence, is to feel that despite the hardships that we sometimes encounter in Eretz Yisrael, there's an underlying confidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has restored us and Chadi Shemenu Kekedem, and we're living through inevitable prophecies of the Nevi'im, and that creates a certain giddiness and confidence. But I think that religious Zionism is always plagued by overconfidence, and it's endemic. It's endemic to the process. We feel as if we're living through the Shir HaShir, and we feel as if the marriage between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael has been resurrected, as if Hester Panim has now given way to a period of Gilui Shechina and Nigla, and that can create too much confidence rather than caution. And part of what I think defined my Rosh Hashiva Zionism was cautious Zionism. For Rav Amital, it was the caution in the wake of the tragedy and the horrors of the Holocaust. In Rav Lichtenstein's case, to me, I thought he was just a cautious personality. He was a very temperate personality. But I always feel as if it grounded our view of Israel, and even though we felt the joy of Zayyo Masa Hashem, like Yilavad Ismachavam, Mesashem, Haizazav, Sinifos Beninu, I very deeply identify with this Meshech Chachma, that Yitzchak doesn't celebrate his triumphant promise by building a Mizbech and showcasing the message that one day I'll have Eretz Yisrael, because there's still other people living there, and he doesn't want to arouse hostilities. The second bracha, which is just general, about HaKadosh Baruch Hu protecting and HaKadosh Baruch Hu enabling human prosperity, that Yitzchak feels comfortable publicizing. And the second difference, the Meshech Chachma says, is not just a question of caution and practicality, but also what's appropriate, what's sensitive. Even if you are confident, there are other people that are living there legally. They have rights to the land, they have rights to wells, they've established families, communities, nation states. And just brandishing this divine promise when people are still living there, before those promises have come due, it's just not sensitive, it's not civilized, it's not respectful. I'll read the language of the Meshech Chachma because it's important to realize this is not just a Western moralist speaking, but it's Meshech Chachma writing this about 120 years ago, when he wrote these words in particular, the ode, Ki haya neged darchei hamusar. It wouldn't be in line with moral behavior. Asher anshei eretz shleimim heimito, the people who are currently residents of the land, are law-abiding citizens. There's no hostility, or certainly there's no warfare. There's always tensions, neighborly tensions. V'hu ya'bid l'nchol artzam, and he just professes that one day this land will be mine. I don't think Yitzchak denied it. I think if someone interviewed Yitzchak and said, is this your land? Of course he would say, it's my land. But it doesn't mean you flout it, or you flaunt it, and you're ostentatious about it. Remember, some while back, probably 15, maybe 20, closer to 20 years ago now, I was interviewed by the New York Times I was a rabbi settler, and he kept asking me what I think about the settlers in Hebron, and they were baiting me into saying something negative about settlers, and in those days were perhaps expressing hostilities that the New York Times reporter didn't find was in sync of how they expected settlers to behave. And of course, I wasn't going to badmouth the settlers, and I said, well, I'm a settler. I said, no, those settlers who carry guns, and at that time I carried a gun because I performed Shemirah, and I said, no, the settlers who carry guns who believe every part of this land is theirs. I said, I'm a settler who carries a gun who believes every part of this land is ours. So when the interviewer realized I refused to be baited into dismissiveness or derogatory remarks towards other settlers, he said, well, what's the difference between settlers in Hebron and yourself? You seem different, you speak differently, you look different. I said, like, I believe that one day this land will be ours, and I believe in a messianic vision. But until that vision emerges, I have to respect the rights. And not that I think settlers in Hebron don't respect the rights. I was just describing my own distillation, which I'm assuming is probably very similar to others. And there was a lot of generalizations in her attitude. And I do feel that we have to act practically and morally and respect the rights of people who are currently living. And it's a gradual process. And I think a lot about that interview when I read this Meshech Chachma. That it's just, we're living in Israel, and as confident and as prophetically aroused or ignited as this process has been, there are people living here, and it doesn't just affect our actions, it also has to affect our tone. Our tone has to be confident, our tone has to be, but I wonder if an overtly messianic tone is in line with what the Meshech Chachma says, Darchei HaMusar. So it's a very interesting question. I don't think there's an easy decision, easy solution, but I think it's a moral dilemma, and it's a moral dilemma which sits at the heart of our return to our country. If we don't face moral dilemmas or balance moral dilemmas, then we lose part of our right to this country. So an interesting Meshech Chachma. Two different reasons that Yitzchak doesn't build a Mizbech after the first Haftacha, the first vision, but after the second he does. First vision mentions Eretz Yisrael, second vision doesn't. What are the two reasons that after the mention of Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't want to publicize that conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? A, because of practical cautiousness. He's still in a precarious situation. B, because it's just not sensitive, it's not decorous, it's not appropriate to just brandish your future in the face of people who are conducting their lives in a normal day-to-day civilian fashion.